So, hello everybody. This is Gibby Swain as part of the Telling Tales project for Halsey Manor. I'm interviewing Roger Conway, and it is the date is, what's the date, Roger?
16th
of March 2015, and we're at Roger and Linda's lovely house, 18 Ruthmore Cottages in Taunton, overlooking the fields full of sheep. And that's fine. So I'm going to ask Roger, it's lovely to be here with you today. We've had coffee. And this is all to do with your life in folk music and music in general, and then coming on to your connections with Halsey Manor. So, Roger, your background, your connections with music and everything?
I've always been musical. I probably came from my grandfather's influence, who was an ear player and a very good pianist. I grew up near Epsom in Surrey, and my first experience, I suppose, was going to the Epsom Song Club in the 60s, when everybody was going in the early 60s. That was quite a jolly thing, full of quite a lot of stable lads from the racing stables, actually. It's quite funny because they used to drink an awful lot and sing very raucously, but rarely in tune. And so from there, and then when I sort of went through university and started getting into my career, I moved to Exeter, shared a house with two other guys, one of whom was very, very involved in folk, in dancing and music, not so much song. But he was a great volunteer at Sidmouth, and that was my first meeting with Bill Rutter. Mm-hmm. And Barry took me along to meet Bill and to see what was going on, and within half an hour Bill had me working for the festival.
What sort of date was that?
That must have been 68, 69, something round about then. I'm not very good at remembering.
No, just roughly.
Rough times, about 68, 69. And Bill was one of these guys who, in some ways, wasn't a very likeable man, but had this wonderful way of persuading people to do things for him. Mm. No matter who you were, and he was quite, could be quite rude, but he had this infectious way of, you knew that the sincerity was there, and he absolutely believed in what he was doing. And that was quite eye-opener, and I did that for that sort of season, and things drifted on career-wise. I moved back to the southeast again after I'd done my sort of spell in Exeter. Going back to southeast, didn't do too much until I got back to the West Country again. Still kept in touch with Barry, as it was, and by that time we were both married. Barry was still very much involved in lots and lots of folky things, not so much for me, occasional visits to Soul Club. Mm-hmm. Ended up in Taunton, started going to the Folk Soul Club there, run by Jerry and Sue Moggs.
Yes.
Very, again, another very enthusiastic sort of situation. Rarely sang, not too self-conscious really, joined in the choruses. And just generally sort of helped within what went on, and occasionally looked after the guests who came along, came to B&B and things. It was fine, and enjoyed that. Barry was with young children, and we both had young children then, started going to folk camp, so he persuaded us. It didn't take a lot of persuading, but we got persuaded to go to folk camp. And it just something we naturally dropped into, and from the very start, it was obviously something ideal. Like all these things, you see how things are organised, and you think about them. And being the sort of personality I am, I'm not backward and coming forward when I think things can be improved. And by giving feedback to Tony, who was the guy who was running folk camps at the time, because by that time Bill Brutter had started folk camps, he'd given up, and Tony Millington had taken over as the sort of organiser, secretary. Giving feedback to Tony, I suddenly got roped in to be staffing member. On folk camps, and I did that, and then got proposed as a trustee, and I then got involved with that. Eventually, I ended up in fact, been running the thing for 23 years.
So folk camps, because I've never been on one. Can you just say?
Folk camps, yeah, it was set up. It was an idea, and again, another Halsey connection, Jeff and Bessie Rye.
I remember them, yeah.
In the early 60s, I suppose it must have been, the EFDSS used to run residential holidays, and that was fine, but they were fairly expensive. They were based on hotels and those sort of things, and people with young families, it was difficult to join in because it was a costly thing to do. And Jeff and Bessie Rye came up with the idea, well, why don't we do some camping holidays and do music and dance and things? And Bill, being Bill, picked this gem of an idea and ran with it and set up folk camps, and it's still going today. It's amazing. I never thought it would last this long, but it has, and it's thriving. And it's basically started off with putting a big marquee in a field. People turn up with their tents, and it's communal. People join in, they help cooking for a day, or doing other jobs around the camp, and that's part and parcel of what it is. And it still happens, and it's moved out a little bit to sometimes there's village halls involved. Halsey was a base for a good number of years for a summer week and also a winter weekend, so they're sort of a balance of things. Now they use other hotels. There's one in the Simon Jap, which is used quite regularly for craft events and things. So it's still going. So that was, I got involved there.
Yeah.
And they eventually ended up, when Tony retired, he retired from that a bit early because things weren't going terribly well. It was a bit of an economic downturn generally, and we couldn't afford to pay the staff that we were paying. So Tony, magnanimously volunteered to retire. The elected trustees at the time decided the idea was really good and we needed to carry it on. So I took over, as one of the trustees, I took over the administration and the management side, and Barry Moore took over managing all the equipment. And we did that as a dual act for quite a few years. In fact, 23 years that structure went, and then I decided that it was time for me to retire. It amuses me now because the job that Barry and I did between us, they now have five people doing, but it's quite how time moves on, I suppose. But it was from that I got into that sort of thing, and being locally to Halsey, I knew about Halsey before because Barry, when I shared the cottage with Barry, was also involved at Halsey. Barry was one of the first, not quite the first tranche of trustees, but he was in the second tranche. And being a chartered surveyor, he naturally drifted towards being one looking after the estate and the management of the estate. I used to pop along with him, and we used to join in various things. And in the days when we used to have the song club in the cellar, I mean, just think about the state of the cellar these days.
At Halsey,
yeah. Used to have weekend, they used to be dancing in the long room, and then they'd have a song club in the cellar. I mean, all those steps that go down there, you think about our health and safety now, you'd be horrified.
So where are those steps?
Well, the steps from by where the ladies, the ladies' toilet was, down there. It's used for some of the storage, and there's the big food store stuff down there now. Staff can do it, it's kept locked. But in those days, that was a space that was used. And it was quite fun, and I used to take along with Barry. Well, Barry then moved up to Nottingham and didn't think he could carry. He did carry on as a trustee for some time, but it became a bit of a strain. And it was partly Barry. I have a feeling Brian Heaton had something to do with it, and perhaps one or two others who I knew at the time suggested that perhaps I might like to get involved. I joined as a member, and so I joined the first time. That was probably late 70s, early 80s. Can't remember dates. Somebody will have a record of dates.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I got elected to the trustee and took over effectively Barry's mantle of looking after the estate, the building stuff, because I'm a sort of building surveyor by profession. And that was really, it started all drifting along there, and at the time Ruth and Mike were the managers there.
Is that Cavill?
Cavill. I was trying to remember the name earlier on. Yeah, Ruth and Mike Cavill were the managers. Now Ruth was the manager. Mike was around. He got involved with West Somerset Morris quite a lot and used to man the bar from time to time and things like that. And it was a sort of thing that was, it was a nice amateur sort of thing, and the trustees were doing their best, but there wasn't really a lot of management background within the trusteeship. And it wasn't as easy as it might have been. There was no business planning as such. It was trying to fill weekends with folk things without anybody really understanding how the economics of these things work. And it was a bit of a struggle. It was always hand to mouth. It still amazes me actually how the manor manages to financially survive, because some of the problems that were there then I still see. Obtaining there. But there was a lot of good people around, a lot of people, I mean, reliable volunteers doing lots and lots of really good work, especially the gardens and around the estate generally. John and Joyce Bothwick were around soon after that. They weren't there at the beginning when I first got involved, but they came along later. Joyce was secretary at the manor, and John, who had retired from the electrical generating industry, took over as sort of treasurer, bookkeeper. There was a slight sort of panic, really, because poor old John died all of a sudden. He hadn't been a particularly fit man, but he certainly wasn't expected to die. And I then took over, just for the time being, as a bookkeeper. I used to go in every Saturday morning and do the books for the week. And that carried on for several months until they realised they had to actually employ a bookkeeper properly, and so I drifted away. So those are the sort of things, the sort of people that came and got involved in that time. Graham and Betty Roberts and Jeff and Bessie Ryan and Rise were lovely. Always disappointed that Jeff never got his gong. I think he would have loved to have a gong, an MBE or something, and we did propose him between us, a number of us, and I did the bit from Folk Camps who supported it. But such is the way of the things, the politics probably didn't work exactly right. But it was fine. We had all sorts of things going on at the time. The water was always a problem, and was to right until they sunk the borehole coming off the, who was responsible for it. And a major problem when the society took over the manor was that when the lawyers split the estate up and Mr. Downs took most of the land and the society took the estate, the buildings, and there was also the other houses and all those other properties, nobody made the right provisions, and it gave that little hamlet, all the people in the hamlet had rights to free water forever without ever having any liability to maintenance and everything else. And it's where Bill Ruther started writing, it induced him to write his history of the manor and the society's involvement. And he had a huge run-in with one of the owners there, a guy who used to run a scrapyard, who was quite adamant about his rights to this water and how the manor should pay for everything. And he was even proposing to build a swimming pool. And with the water, pressure on the water, was difficult enough for the house, and certainly as a commercial hotel, which is effectively what was being run there, if this water had been taken off to fill a swimming pool regularly, then there would have been no water for the house. And then there was problems with the testing of the water and getting public health to agree it all. We did the filter beds, which are up as you come down Halsey Coombe. The water comes off Halsey Coombe because there's a lot of sheep up there, so there's a lot of sheep droppings in the water. And there were several settlement tanks and a sand filter and unreed beds to clean it up before it came around the base of the hill to the manor. Quite a lot of work was done. I was teaching at SCAT at the time, teaching surveying, so I used my students to do quite a lot of surveying work at the time, and we got some good stuff done from the students, and they did a lot of the graph work. So we got a lot of stuff plotted out, and certainly things like the drainage got all plotted out, because that was a mishmash of where it all went, and we, at least we knew where the drainage all went eventually. So that worked quite well. We were pressured by the roof all the time, by the roof. Bill's bête noire was the roof. What are we going to do about the roof? What are we going to do about the roof? And so back in thereabouts, early 1970s, we didn't think the roof would last very much longer. So 40 years later, the roof still hasn't had any major works done to it, and it still seems to be there. It's a hugely expensive job because it's slated, and it's for the perspective, it's reducing size of slates as you come down the roof to get the perspective right. So every single course is a different size. And that when it comes, I mean, back in the early 70s, I estimated it at about 65,000 to re-roof, so goodness knows what the price would be now to do it. So those were the sort of things that were happening, and lots of stuff was happening. The Mews had been acquired, and work was happening on the Mews to try and ensuite things, and that's gradually done. And it was all looking right, except for the fact that you could never predict the cash flow. Very, very lucky to have quite a few commercial bookings at the time midweek, because the folk stuff worked okay for the summer holidays, worked okay for the weekends, but midweek it was really quiet in there a lot of the time. And when Bruce and Pepsi Green came as managers, they worked very, very hard to build up that commercial thing, got a contract with Clark's, Clark's Shoes, who used to be regularly there. They were good fun as well. Some of the trustees got involved, and I used to go and run the bar quite frequently, so that Bruce and Pepsi at least had some time off. That time they got very, very friendly with Pete Shuttler. And so the Yetties were, that's when the Yetties became good friends of the manor. And particularly personal friends, Pete Marion became very, very friendly with Bruce and Pepsi. And they spent a lot of time there, and that was going well. And they took over another name from that era as Martin Radford, who was a lovely chap. He was there as a sort of general dog's body, really. Just physically disabled, and felt really low about himself most of the time because he was physically disabled, and because he'd obviously come from a background which used that against him. And Bruce and Pepsi were brilliant with him, I'd say. They built him up and built up his confidence. And he is a lovely singer, a super. Wild Mountain Time was always his signature song. He'd always sing that. And I never know what happened to him in the end, but because when Bruce and Pepsi left, and we didn't really see much of Martin after that. But he was a very reliable chap. You could give him a little job to do, and it would be done. It might not be done particularly quickly, but it would always get done. They were very trustworthy and everything else. So those were happening at that time. Now it's where my memory starts to get things. I'm not quite sure whether it was that time or whether when I came back on, because I did decide that there was a dysfunctionality about the council, about certain people on the council who couldn't look at the reality of where we were and what was needed in terms of business plans and things. And I did actually then walk away. And then I came back again. So time's going, I'm not quite sure. Somebody in that will find dates and be able to check this out. But eventually we got to the point where there were difficulties with the managers. Something had to be done. Martin Lang was a member of the council at the time, and he was company secretary. And he and I were authorised to resolve this problem, and which we did, in some ways quite brutally, but tried to do it quite friendly. The managers were told to go, and we lined up Mr. H, Bernard Huxtable. Bernard Huckner, who was a professional relief manager in the hotel industry, a really old-fashioned gentleman, absolutely immaculately turned out all the time, very, very good manager of staff, but not really the guy who wants to take huge responsibilities for pushing a business forward. So we got Bernard lined up because we knew we'd have to immediately have somebody there. Bernard ended up staying about 4 years in the end. He was a lovely guy. Had this sort of weakness for mints, chocolate mints, and there was always it was always a joke that there was always lots and lots of these boxes of chocolate mints around because that was Bernard's little weakness. But he was a lovely guy, and so brilliant with the staff. He really coalesced the staff. And the staff that Horsey have always had a really good domestic staff there. They stayed there a long while. They've always worked there a long while. I know it's a difficult place, so if you're out in that area, you hang on to a job because you've either got to go to Mining or Taunton if you want another job. But they have been very good. They sometimes became a bit sort of territorial about it, the Rexworthies. There was several generations of Rexworthies working there at one time. And it just, at times, it just felt it was a bit of a fiefdom going on, but it wasn't meant in that way. It was just the way it happened. And things have changed, and there's still some people that have been there a long, long while that are still working there. So that's quite good. With the arrangements when Bernard came, then obviously he wasn't resident. He lived in Taunton. He lived with his brother, who was quite a sickly person, so Bernard couldn't leave him nights. So then we had a bit of a sort of house sitting rota, so there was always a member of the council. I seem to do probably more than my share of house sitting and running the bar and things, but I quite enjoyed it. I was even catering there at one time, but that squeak reminding me that it's time for his lunch, by the way. Can we stop for a moment?
We will. So we're restarting the interview again. This is with Roger Conway, Gibby Swain interviewing on the 4th, no it isn't, it's the 16th of March, 2015. And we're at Roger and Linda's house, Roughmore Cottages in Taunton. And we're talking about the connections with Halsey. And we had to stop to feed the cat, I think. But here we go again.
Right, thank you. One thing I'm very, very proud of in my involvement at Halsey was the bar. That the panelling that's in the bar, not so much the main wall panelling, but the panelling that forms the bar, is old church pews. And Graham Coggins, who was a trustee at the time, and we acquired these, or Graham did most of the work of acquiring them, and then between us we worked out the design to build the bar. Because before there'd been a great big chest thing that was wheeled in and out every time the bar was used. And it was decided it was much more professional, certainly when we had the commercial bookings, to have a proper sort of built bar in there. So I'm quite, yeah, that's the sort of thing that some of the trustees have done, and brings happy memories of doing open days where I was behind the bar and Graham Roberts was doing his guided tours of the house. It's quite sort of fluid. And every time Graham came round, history seemed to have changed. And that was quite amusing, sitting there listening to it. Lovely fellow, though. He was Graham. Really lovely fellow. So that's sort of part and parcel, really, of my involvement with Halsey. I got the game, my second spell on the council. I just felt the governance was done by a lot of very well-meaning and enthusiastic members, but the reality is there wasn't the business or the commercial background or understanding to really get it right, and I did fall out with one or two people trying to bring some sort of business sense to it. I introduced Alec McClure, who was at the time was very involved with folk camps, but also very keen on Halsey. I introduced him and he became a trustee. Alec at the time was I believe number 3 in the Inland Revenue, so a very, very financially astute guy, little lowland Scotsman, with quite a broad accent, but very, very quick, very, very bright, very, very clever man. Unfortunately, he's not very well at the moment, and he's actually has a terminal illness. So if anybody wants to interview Alec, you'll need to do it fairly soon. But both Alec and I, we tried to bring some sort of financial sense and business planning and financial planning schemes, which the rest of the trustees weren't terribly keen about. And so Alec and I walked out and left it. So that was really how I got involved. I then left membership of the manor because previously when I'd left the council, I was continually phoned up and asked to do things, and more or less on the basis, well, you are a member, so you ought to be helping. So I thought if I wasn't a member of the society, I wouldn't have to do it anymore. But since then, I've had quite a good relationship with the manor, and I do, being a walker, I often do lead walks for various groups that are there, and I thoroughly enjoy that involvement. So that's as we are. Gibby's mentioned about my involvement in Morris, and I got to Morris really from folk camps, from going to folk camps. I tried it out as part of the things that folk camps do is always having a go at all sorts of things, and got home from probably my first folk camp and decided I'd go and join my local Morris team, Taunton Deane Morris, and I was with them for 6 or 7 years. So I was bagman and assistant squire for quite a long while. Then again, the personality is probably my fault. And I moved on to other Morris teams. Been a full member of Chalice Morris and Exeter. I'm still a member of Exeter. I've recently returned as a full member of Taunton Deane last year, and I'm enjoying it very much. And the people, funny enough, the people who I perhaps had the most arguments with are really quite good friends now, so it's quite nice to go in that sort of full circle. Bit of a Morris tart as well. I tend to go with anybody who would like let me turn up, and I've done tours and things with Benfield side Morris, who are from County Durham, again because of folk camp connections involved in them, and Boar's Head, who have now become Great Yorkshire Morris, again folk camp connections with them, and I quite enjoy that side of it. I was a dancer initially all the way through. Probably my first spell of Taunton Deane was certainly all as a dancer. Then in 1993, I was diagnosed with cancer in the cartilage of my shoulder. And following surgery meant that probably dancing was probably not an option anymore. I've always been more interested in the music than the dancing, if the truth be told. So I started sort of playing, seriously, I played around with box and whistle and things before then, but I started trying to play a bit more seriously. Probably one of my funniest Morris stories ever is that I joined a mixed side. They were that time called Rushton Village Morris. They then became Withy Morris and eventually folded up. But when I first went to, I was invited down to talk about taking folk events to France by one of my students at the time, who was a member of Rushton. And I went along and they said, oh, I'll bring your box, you can play in that one if you want to. So I turned up and sort of stayed. Tim had told them all about my shoulder, so they made all sorts of allowances for all the bum notes because of my shoulder. What they never realised was that I'd never been able to play any better than that. That's a suitable point to
give them. Yes. Do you want to have a...
I think we're probably... unless what else you'd like on...
Yeah, so now your involvement is doing walking groups.
So as far as these current full times, yes, I'm the... What I always know as the Guildford Holiday Week, which I know... I don't know anybody from Guildford involved anymore, but ones that Coral Charles used to run... last couple of years I've led a couple of walks for them, and I'm doing sort of 3 or 4 walks for them again this year. Yes. I also did, for 2 or 3 years, did a residential Coleridge Way walk.
Oh, yes.
And, of course, I'm quite friendly with Roger and Nan Fitz, so that, I get sort of involved with that, and Christine, of course.
Yes.
And
yes.
Christine and Alan were good friends.
Mm. Well, thank you so much, Roger. There's lots I never knew about you.
There you are. That's a danger, isn't it? Here too.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that Roger will play us a little tune on his melodeon. It should be really good, and I'll take a couple of pictures. And thank you again, Roger.
All right. Pleasure. Real pleasure.
Bye-bye for now.
Thank you.
So So Roger Conway's now going to play his melodeon for us, a Gibby Swaynes recording, and this is the 16th of March at Roger's house. Thanks, Roger.
Okay.
Fantastic. Hey!
It worked.
Oh.